Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser. I hope everyone has had a lovely day today. Mine has been quite busy. But before we start with the program, I really want to do a little housekeeping. You know, I do that every week. I want to make sure that all who are listening understand that they can call the number 516-453-6063, and that will connect you to the show, and you can listen. If you have a question, you can push the number 1. If you want to hear past episodes, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/ S as in Sam, F as in Fred, T as in Tom, H as in Harry, and the number 2. That will connect you to former episodes that we've been doing, and I think we're up to episode, 10, 12. We're just sailing along here. And I'd like to thank you all every week for tuning in to our discussions and conversations, and this week I have another one of my wonderful, wonderful friends who I have been knowing now for over 10 years. He and I have been on committees and board meetings together. He has been also my boss as he has hired me to perform. I have to give him credit for that. He has created projects for me to be involved in. And we're talking about Mr. Patrick Browin, who is a CPO of ArtsQuest in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. So, good evening, Patrick.
Lenny Godfrey, thank you for having me. I am thrilled to be speaking with you tonight. And may I just open by submitting, no one is the boss of Lenny Godfrey, we were collaborators together. I don't know that you have a boss.
Well, I thank you for that. I say that lovingly,
of course.
Yes, and I know you do. We've discussed that. I thank God is my boss. That's about it. Now that Mommy and Daddy are gone, I mean, that's it.
Fair.
Even Carl doesn't hold that position. He kind of negotiates, you know. But thank
you.
Well,
he can negotiate well, I'm sure, but he's a seasoned veteran at it. But
well,
we've been able to negotiate well throughout the years in our relationship.
Well,
and
we have, you know, considering, you know, I want to go back to when I first met you, because it was really at the beginning of when ArtsQuest was being built, the campus. You all had been, of course, in reality, a very long time, but the campus was really coming together, and I remember that first day of meeting you, because we were all together why don't you tell the story of the leadership that was there, the leadership that is now, so I don't get anything wrong. So go on, Patrick, you start telling it.
Well, no, I appreciate that opportunity. So we were developing SteelStack, a dynamic arts and cultural entertainment community campus here on the former Bethlehem Steel Mill in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, that had been defunct for almost 20 years at the time that we redeveloped it to an arts and entertainment center. And at the time, Jeff Parks, our president and founder, was looking to expand the influence, right, expand the voices at the table that was driving the creative content and the what we would become. And we were historically a music campus or a music organization with and then added visual arts after we turned 20. But we you know, we knew this campus offered us more, and whether that was, you know, yourself coming in and being opening as kind of a voice of the theater, but really expanding to spoken word, and then much more than that.
I want the audience also to know how much you all had accomplished. You all used to do a 10-day music festival?
Oh, sure.
And you would attract more than a million people in that 10-day span. Is that not right?
That's right. Music Fest, founded in 1984 as the Bethlehem steel industry was collapsing here in Bethlehem. We wanted to invigorate the business community and the pride of the community. And so created a 10-day multi-stage festival event that grew to be 17 stages, more than 400 artists from all over the world for more than 600 performances, and that would attract over a million people over the course of the 10 days annually. And then we expanded from there and grew into a holiday market. Chris Kindlemart opened the Visual Arts Center in South Bethlehem, restored an old Chiquita banana warehouse, which we now term the Banana Factory, which is home to 40 resident studio artists, a hot glass shop, a digital photography center, and multiple gallery spaces. And then came SteelStack. So the organization had accomplished quite a bit, had built quite a number of flagship events. And a building, and then we walked into SteelStax in 2011.
Absolutely, and you know, I remember my entrance with Jeff when I walked into what was to be the main building, but still was being built, and it was all this concrete and steel. And I said, you know, well, where's the dressing rooms? I remember that was really, I said, you know, you're going to have all these people come in and we have to have wonderful dressing rooms. And of course, Jeff would laugh at me, you know, he said, only you would think that. Here we're trying to build something and you're thinking about where the dressing rooms are going to be. But not to do a commercial for ArtsQuest, but I believe that the potential of this organization is so wonderful as it's grown over the years, as starting from Jeff and now with Cassie Hilgard being the president and CEO of ArtsQuest. It has such a future in it, and you are part of that because you started as a what, Patrick?
I began as an intern. I was going to school at Temple University in Philadelphia for tourism and hospitality management, and I was interested in I was a musician myself. I was a percussionist and drummer, and I loved planning events. When my friends were getting together in high school and college, you know, I was the one who said, okay, we're going here and we're going to meet up at this time and put the details together. It's going to cost this much, right? Putting the details together. So the opportunity of working on a music festival married my interest, right, in both event planning and my passion in music.
It didn't start there, though. I mean, because you were a percussionist, music started in the arts and in the form of music, started rather young in your life. When did you start the percussion hold interest in your life?
I did. You know, my parents, I began taking drum lessons in second grade, and credit to my parents who, you know, really stepped out on that at an early age. Our music program in school didn't start until fourth grade or even fifth grade, And so it was something I had an interest in. They themselves were not, don't have a strong background in music necessarily. Appreciation for it certainly, but not you know, any performance or training in their regard. My father, now in his later 70s, just took up piano lessons 3 years ago, and it's wonderful to see him grow as a musician now himself, right, for the first time.
Yes.
And but they instilled this love of it for me and discipline. They instilled discipline in me at a young age.
Yes.
To say, you know, you've got to practice, and every young kid, right, doesn't want to practice. You know, but just you got to practice and invest the time, and I was able to grow into a fairly skilled percussionist. I went into high school and college, and was able to lead some ensembles that I was a part of.
But you see, that I think is one of the things that is why we get along so well, because not only are you a business person, which reminds me of Carl, because that's what his career was, but you look at the arts as an artist also. And so how, first explain, I want you to explain this acronym of CPO. What does that entail? Without, you know, I know you could be here all day long talking about all the things that you do, but there's so many acronyms on all these initials. So this one is Chief Programming Officer. What does Patrick Brogan do as Chief Programming Officer? And for the evening now for us to talk to, how starting, it's so very young with percussions, how is that really, how did that prompt you for that? How did that influence your whole career and how you feel about being in the arts and hiring artists now?
Well, that's a loaded question, and I'll try to answer it briefly and succinctly for the audience. As Chief Programming Officer, I'd say my role boils down to several things. I create, I partner, and I manage. And I create. There's a curation to what I do in terms of creating a vision for what our musical acts across the festival might be, or what vision we want to take at Steel Stacks within a certain series, right? A jazz series, or we want to do a, there was a year where we looked at music and arts from the Muslim world and from the Muslim nations. And so, you know, we were creative individuals. I have a great team of creative individuals. You know, we partner. We have we are tremendously rooted in the community here, and I hope that people see us, you know, walk that walk as much as more so than talk it. In that we're looking to partner with the community. We're of and for and by the community here. So whether it's, you know, our Sabor Latin Festival or our Three Kings celebration is a great example of that, where it's largely a Latinx celebration here. Where the community comes out and is able to celebrate what to them is a very special and religious and meaningful holiday, and we're the space to do that, and we partner with them on that. And lastly, I manage our resources, dollars and staff, time, commitment. I think the most valuable resource we have as a nonprofit arts organization is not money, but rather time. Where do we want to put our efforts? Where do we want to put our staff and their focus and attention, as well as certainly our money, our budget, and, you know, the resources that we manage as an organization and with and for the community is a large part of my job on a daily basis of figuring out how we're going to employ them to the most benefit.
Well, okay, now I want to get more specific. Because I know kind of all of those things are the things that you do, but your day-to-day decisions are very important. I think the audience doesn't understand, well, may not be mindful that you are the person that programs for us what we're going to see. You're a very important person in our programming of the music festival, as are the programmers that program the movies that we see, the television programs that we see. So when you start thinking about programming, how is it different from someone who has not been influenced by the arts? How do you think, when you think about these artists, and this is what we would talk about, I think, in the board meetings, your sensitivity about not just seeing the bottom line, and the bottom line being a very important thing, but also seeing artists as artists. The advantage of having someone like you in that position. That's why I felt comfortable serving on boards with you, because I felt as an artist, you could also see the needs of the artist as well as the organization. So, all right, I'm going to give you a hypothetical situation. We are in the position where we can, let's go back a little bit, because I don't know any of the present day popular groups as I should. So let's go back to if we wanted to employ Patti LaBelle. All right.
Sure.
She's a resident of Pennsylvania. She's well-known godmother of soul, that kind of audience. What would some of the factors would you take into consideration as opposed to Chicago, which you've had there?
Right.
What's the difference that you think about? I want the audience to know the thinking, how the arts, being in the arts, influences those two different categories. You have a soloist there, and you have now, and both of them have great reputations in the business. So say that they were both candidates for Music Fest. How would you approach either one, and what's the difference?
Sure. No, great question, and I'll begin by answering your question, and then I have a broader thought on the topic.
Okay.
That in approach, you know, some of it is, those are two, I'll call them two larger pop artists, right, that are known. So some of it is the same, right? You're negotiating with agents, and you're kind of trying to make mm-hmm. the dollars and cents work on the back end. But as you approach the acts as individuals, as artists, as people, you know, I think it starts there. You're approaching them as people, and so you're saying, you know, what is important to this particular artist? And one of the things that I have long had a philosophy on is, you know, our programming is set up almost like a triangle, in that there are three components to that triangle. There's the artist, there's Arts Quest, and there's the audience. And so how do I, as Arts Quest, put the artist in the best position possible for them to succeed, to have a phenomenal show for the audience, right? So the three mm-hmm. A's are artist, audience, Arts Quest. How my role is to put the artist in a position to have a magical moment with the audience. And if I do that well enough, they don't even know I exist, right? It's just Patti or Chicago having this moment with them. And, you know, and then you go into the particular artist with, and I've had the pleasure to present both in my time here at Arts Quest. And mm-hmm. with Ms. LaBelle, it starts right there, the respect you have for her, right? And so as I address her, Ms. LaBelle, versus Chicago, which is more of they're a rock band, right? So
yes,
you have to say there's not respect given there, but it's a little different, right, from Ms. LaBelle. Mm-hmm. So you want, whether it's the artist's writer, which gives us an opportunity to understand a little bit more about what would, again, put them in the most positions to be comfortable, to have the priority for them met so that they're in the best position for a show. To Tanya, and thinking through what is the backstage look like? What's the meals that are going to be served that day, and what do each of them, which are very different palates, in those two particular artists. So you are, and now I'll step back to say, as a musician myself, I'm empathetic to the fact that, sympathetic to the fact that these folks have given their time, their day, their experience in the service of our community and to lift our community. And so in respect to that, that whether they're on the road, every day, right, on a tour bus or whatever, the little things that others might be like, well, that's a ridiculous demand of a diva artist. You don't know that. You're not walking in their shoes and having their experience. And so, again, I go back to be listening to them, to what their needs may be, anticipating what their needs may be, all helps us put them in the position for success. I'll say philosophically, mm-hmm. I think as an artist myself, what I've enjoyed about my job and what I see as a large part of my job is to remove barriers, remove concerns, and whenever possible say, hey, don't worry about that. The less that any artist this is, whether it's yourself creating a spoken word play reading, or whether it's a dance group creating a site specific massive, you know, large national touring musician, whatever the case may be, how can I say to them, yeah, don't worry about that. Whatever I can say, however I can free them up to do what they do, the better they're going to do it. And so that's how I've approached, you know, any project, any artist that we're working with is in the spirit of, you know, we'll take care of that. Don't worry about that. Or, oh, you know, I'll figure out the way. My hard job, the hard part of my job is I figure out how the dollars and cents work, you know, so that the artist is simply dedicated to the art.
Well, I think, first of all, now you have your phone so that because you're getting a little foggy away, now you have it, I think, in a position that we can hear you clearly. So
is this clearly? Okay, I'm sorry
yes,
about that.
Yes, no, that's really good. I found in following you, sometimes shadowing you when these guests would come, I thought that you had, I believe, a sense of business, which is what we've had guests on here, corporate guests, Kwame Salter, talking about the business and how the arts will affect that. But the sense of business was also tailored with a sense of having been a performer and knowing that the requests that performers have, some people think that they're silly, you know, room temperature water or iced water or a certain kind of tea, a certain kind of lighting for a certain way. Understanding that it really isn't being difficult, I think is the word that I want to say. It's not being difficult, but sometimes you are approaching these artists in the middle of a tour and they've just been doing night after night after night, and what they try to do is ask you to have something there, comfort them, that will allow them to give you the best show. And I think if I put one plus one plus one together, those are the things that make it successful in Arts Quest and Music Fest, in that you anticipate a lot of those things. I've never heard performers come there and complain that they were not satisfied with the treatment from the time they hit the campus to the time that they left, that their needs were not anticipated. And I think that that has a lot to do with you and your background and your background in the arts. That's the connection that I'm trying to make with you too, because I don't think you give yourself even enough credit. You think more like an artist than you know. You know, you have a lot of sensitivity in that background, and I believe that you pick up and don't think it's unreasonable some of the things that some of the artists will ask you. Now, I'm not talking about the money part, because that's a whole nother thing, but some of the things that really make it possible once they get on the campus to give you the performance that you really want your audiences to have. So I will say to you, congratulations on that, because that's a difficult job, but I think it is helped by the fact that you had a musical background at the very beginning. But I'm going to take this a whole nother step. In that, when you started this job, I would say you've been programming since I've known you, have you not?
Yes. What I've been programming for 15 years now.
Yes. What has changed for you? What has changed?
Well, let's perhaps we throw out the last year and a half, right, where everything has changed. And I regularly am joking, you know, we're in the Wild West right now. Like, there's no rules. Anything goes. We're everything changes every day, right? So it's such unprecedented times, pandemic, that it almost, you know, I'd rather take a longer lens than just, you know, what's different in this moment. And say, obviously, culture changes quite a bit. You know, when I began, I think music was still, you know, music was still king. There was still MTV playing music videos. There was still, and I say music was king because what I saw in the arts presenting field is a shift when that recession hit in the 2007-8-9 window, and everybody kind of stayed home for a year or two. But reality TV was just exploding at the time, and I'm not talking reality TV like, you know, the early adopters of it. you know, the cooking shows stand out to me the most that exploded at that time, Food Network and several other channels, all doing cooking contests and things like that. And suddenly, you know, those started the tour. And you can have Alton Brown come to your venue and do a cooking show. Or you could have, you know, these, instead of music, there became other celebrities and radio hosts and radio shows, podcasts, all of that has expanded significantly. You know, you and I wouldn't have had this opportunity, this platform to speak 15 years ago. And so
Exactly.
The way that you're able to reach people has exploded over the last 15 years with obviously social media and its impact in our everyday lives. Facebook was just at its formative stages when I began booking, and now, you know, we're, I don't know, four or five platforms later that are king in terms of how to reach an audience and I'll not even say the business side is how to reach the audience, right? How to use these social media platforms to reach an audience. The artistic side is how can I use them to connect? How can I use these new platforms, new media, new disciplines to connect audience, my community, with the world, with different thoughts, with different experiences, with different cultures, with different forms of the arts, and how can I push that? So I think, you know, obviously the digital revolution that we've been in has been a large part of it. As culture changes every cycle of years, 7 to 10 years, you know, the culture changes too. So I've experienced now probably two culture changes in this explosion of technology.
When you think about now, I think it's the age of the independent artist. I think that doesn't mean it's the end of the artist that is represented by the large corporations. But I believe that independent artists now are beginning to have a grasp on more opportunities. How do you deal with an artist that's independent as opposed to one who has all the representation? How does that feel, and what's the difference there? Is there when you speak to the artist, is there a lack of aggression when they are represented more? Is the independent artist a little bit more aggressive about their careers?
Lynn, that's an excellent question, and I'll speak very generally to it, because obviously every individual is unique, right? But
yeah,
I find, you know, I agree with the sentiment. I'll start there. I agree with the sentiment that the independent artist, in some ways, has even more opportunities to create for themselves, certainly than ever before, but sometimes, in some ways, more than some of these artists that are tied up or locked into certain deals or contracts or management companies or whatever it might be. There's a lot to unpack here. Part of what we built at SteelStacks was a way to grow with an artist, right, and to grow the artist in our community. And so we have these wonderful smaller stages that offer free to the public opportunities, and for the audience, I'll offer, you know, it's free to the public, being a show that anyone can walk up to. The community is welcome. It's probably outdoors, and it might be in a festival setting. It might be on our town square campus at SteelStacks. Offers the artist a no pressure situation, right? Versus a ticket sales opportunity would be the alternative to that. So if I'm bringing an artist to Bethlehem for the very first time and the community's never met them, the best way to get them some fans and to get people to know them is to put them in the position like a free to the public opportunity, of which we have many, and then maybe start them out on a smaller stage and then grow them and they wow some people there and then we grow them to a larger stage, and suddenly, and we've done this with now hundreds of acts over the decade we've been at SteelStacks, where we've grown an artist from someone who's never played Bethlehem before to someone who can walk into our year-round club venue, the Music Fest Cafe, and sell 500 tickets. And to be a part of that growth with an unrepresented or developing artist is one of the most rewarding parts of the job. And the whole staff gets excited about it. The whole staff rallies behind this you know, it largely independent artists as they kind of take to it. And what's also beautiful is to see an artist then get picked up. There's a group from Philadelphia, Low Cut Connie, who we were working directly with, and they had a friend managing them of the band. And one day I got a call from one of my closest agent friends at a major agency, creative artist agency in Nashville, who said, hey, what do you know about this group? They said I should call you, and I'm thinking about representing them. And then I called them, and I said, here's why you'd love this agent. And it was a moment to play matchmaker and be a part of that when an independent artist becomes now a represented artist, to be a part of that growth for them was one of my favorite moments in my career, truly.
Well, what do you do?
I don't know that I answered your question there.
No, some of it, yes, because it's a new day, I think, and it's a new day on top of an older day. And when I say that, I don't want people to get the interpretation that I think I'm throwing everything out that used to be. But we are in a time where things are different now, and they were beginning to be different even before the pandemic. But you did answer in that the opportunities that are there for the independent artists, they're more abundant than they used to be before the pandemic and a little bit before that. I think now the people are less, younger people are less dependent upon a certain avenues in which they were taught that you had to proceed to go down. I think they're creating their own. But I have another, so yes, you did answer a lot of that question. I have another question.
I'll broaden it to one sentence if you don't mind.
And okay.
I'll say, working with an independent artist allows for direct communication, which expands opportunity, versus working with a represented artist in some way where there's more narrow communication, and so it's filtered and creates less opportunity.
Which do you – well, it almost sounds like you prefer the first choice, and that – but
Depends on the situation. You know, obviously for our main stage of Music Fest, right, you know, it's going to be different than
But personally, what I enjoy
certainly is developing an artist.
Yeah. The opportunity to, and you do know some of those larger names, though, personally, the opportunity to communicate with them, I think, always gives you a little bit more of an edge because of the simple fact it's just a conversation. You both know that it's about business. You both know that it's about money, but there is also that level, I believe, where when you have face-to-face conversation with someone without that person in the middle there, who is there primarily to protect them against someone who is maybe not as savory as they should be. But once they might be comfortable and move away from that situation, I think it brings about a better communication between artists and the venue that they're getting ready to perform in. I found that representation is great, and then non-representation can be great also. Once you realize that you're dealing with someone who is a reputable, reliable person. But now I want to move on because now we're less than 30 minutes left, which I have to devote a few minutes to anyone who wants to push that number one button and ask you a question. But before we get to that, what happens when you have faith in an act, but the act doesn't do as well as you want it to do? What, you know, hypothetically, you know, an act that you think has great potential, but given that opportunity that you've created for them, they didn't quite make it. What process do you go through after that with them?
Well, there's the stages of grief, right? But it begins with the disappointment, and you have to allow for that for a moment of that to say, that moment of recognition, I'm disappointed, whether it's at the box office, the economics of the show, or even worse, if the show itself the artistic creation or content underperformed in some way. You know, I think you start to evaluate a bit, and you break it down, and you say, what of this could I have done differently? Our staff have done differently. Or our team have done differently. What whether it's marketing channels or whether it's the ticket prices, were they too high? Were they too low? What could we have done differently there? Partnerships maybe we should have put in place that we didn't. Outreach we could have done. You take stock internally first, right, and say, okay, what did we do, and was it our best? We always ask ourselves, was this our best? And then, and then you start to work with the artists and have a conversation with them and or their management or whatever it might be, and say, and sometimes those are hard conversations. You say, hey, look, you post about it. The date wasn't on your website or whatever it might be, or even harder still, to have a conversation with maybe a developing act that you say, here's and hopefully. We've built a relationship of trust that I'm able to offer some feedback to them to say, what about doing it differently next time? Or what about this? And then you kind of see how receptive they are to that and whether they've taken stock and evaluated too of what went wrong on their end and whether we can come together and say, okay, so this is how we do it differently next time. And that begets the next time conversation then. And then if it's truly a collaborative process, if it's truly an open, honest dialogue between both parties, then you're on the mend probably and on the road to putting them in a different position to hopefully enable success in a return engagement in some way. And of course, certainly sometimes you have to, I've seen no square pegs in round holes, right? If it doesn't work, and the best answer is to leave it be, right? You say this is a square peg and we can't put it in this round hole. And so we're not able to move forward with whatever that may be.
So not everything is going to work the way you want, as you anticipate that. So I want to turn a corner now and go back a little bit for your degree in tourism and hospitality management. So for me, that really indicates one word, service. And that's a very important word for me, because I believe as I've grown in this industry, I realize that that is really what my position is as to my audience, in that I service them and try to bring to them the most successful bit of entertainment or information that I can. Why did you decide to pick that in Temple University?
No, that's an excellent question, and I appreciate you pointing out the word service. I was bracing for you to say the word business, because I know we certainly tie a lot of ArtsQuest success and my success at it to this balance between the artistic needs and will and content, right, alongside the business aspect of it. But I appreciate spending a minute on service, because you're right, the tourism and hospitality field, and it's service of many masters, right? It's service of the community. Mm-hmm. It's service of others in some way, and whether that be, the community, whether that be a particular demographic in the community, or whether that be, the business segment of our community. A lot of what tourism is to boost the local economy in some way. And so an ArtsQuest certainly, as part of our mission statement, is that we exist to drive a thriving economy in our community. And whether that be through visitors or people coming out and getting a sense of pride in our community. And so I say it serves us on many services, is the word there, on many fronts.
Prompted you when you were younger, before ArtsQuest, before you knew that this would turn into where you are now, what prompted you? That's a particular kind of major. What in your life led you into that? You said you used to program things for your friends. Was that awareness in your life at that point in time that told you that's where you need to go? Did it start before that? Did it start in middle school? Did it start in high school? What made you think of that, because you're, I mean, it is service, it, and you do have that element. I'm just curious what put
no,
you in that
excellent,
position.
Excellent thing to tie together there, Lenny. It's I hate to take it back to my faith, but I honestly think, you know, a lot of that was rooted in my Catholic family, and whether that's, you know, the Catholic guilt of it all, or whether, and I say that jokingly, but or whether it's truly, you know, I watched my parents, my mother was a grade school teacher and then became principal, and my father worked in a first school district as well, and I watched them both serve the community in their own way and through education, and I also watched them volunteer at things, and a lot of it was around church. Church was important to us through my youth, and seeing particularly my father, who's a very calm, measured, well-tempered, for being an Irishman, a very, very calm individual. And his sense of volunteerism was what I think rubbed off on me in that way to pursue a service industry. I learned it by watching my parents.
And so that really started very young, your desire to be in a position where you could service, and the position, well, the seeking of a degree in tourism and hospitality.
And hospitality.
Really, and you can go in a lot of different ways. That way, it takes you to the hotel business. Why not the hotel business? Why some place like ArtsQuest? Why?
That's where the marriage of my passion in music and arts. And when I was young, it was Broadway. I remember my dad. The greatest day of my sixth grade year was probably that my dad took off on the Wednesday before Thanksgiving, the day before Thanksgiving, and we went up and we just went to New York City and got in line at TKTS and Times Square, and we didn't even know what we were going to see, but we were going to go see a Broadway show together, my father and I. And
yes.
You know, that, so I truly, the memory is just blazing across my mind right now of that moment in a formative moment there. And you know, so whether it was Broadway shows or whether it was music and my parents playing music, and you know, their music was the Mamas, the Papas, and you know, 70s music that I grew up listening to in my house. But however that arts was around me, I picked it up as a passion, and I think that's where I really found my identity was in the arts. You know, I like any kid in the arts. You know, I think I had trouble connecting to others sometimes. I wasn't. You know, I enjoy coaching all three of my kids' basketball teams. You know, I wasn't a particularly strong athlete. I wasn't particularly, you know, I think the arts was a safe, creative space for my mind at a very early age. And so to be able to marry that with a service field, which was also inspired, you know, in my life at a young age, is an opportunity that I recognize how blessed I am and I'm grateful for.
Well, you know, the connection of it all, as I try to do your journey from being that young child in Pennsylvania and being exposed to the arts at a certain point in your life, and then also being exposed to the need of service. And I think a lot of us who are in the business have that. We just don't connect it so much as to how it really got us on the path that we're on now. And that's one of the things that always, I believe, stands out with me because of the simple fact that you always have that sense of what is best for the organization as well as your audience, as well as the people who work underneath you and with you. And it's a great sense of a person that's wrapped up in. So when I think about that, where do you think we are going in this business, given the last year and a half, and I'm not just talking about in-person performances, because I know that that's on the mind of a lot of people, but that will take its own form eventually. We will work that out. It won't work out, I believe, as fast as people think, but it'll be worked out. But the business now, there is such a, but look where we are. We're on digital radio, which, you know, for me didn't exist a year and a half ago for someone like me. How do you think things like this are going to influence your business and Arts Quest and what it is that you do? Will you get into more of the digital lifestyle? Is there a part of Arts Quest that's forming a group? Because you all are so progressive there. Is there a group that is a digital group where we will enjoy music digitally as well as in person? Where is it going, do you think?
And I'm excited for the journey ahead as much as I have an answer for you right now. Certainly the last year has allowed us the opportunity, has forced us the opportunity to put more of our content online. And seeing that, we have this Free the Public concert series here at the Levitt Pavilion Steel Stacks, and broadcasting those shows on our Facebook page last year and getting people tuning in from Boise, Idaho, and Denver, Colorado, and Austin, Texas, and across the country. And with Music Fest, there were people tuning into Music Fest every day last year on our digital platform from Japan and from South mm-hmm. America and from across Europe. And so to be able to provide that new level of access is very exciting to us. We're still working our way through. I do think a lot of what we do, there's a live element that just can't be replicated online. And I know our community and communities across the world are excited to get back to that in-person experience. But certainly there are some takeaways already that we're employing, but carrying on from the pandemic. I think the creative, the last year is going to inspire some real creativity, and I'm hopeful we're on the verge of a roaring 20s again, where arts and culture thrives as people come back together in community.
Well, you know, I feel it. I feel that there is a push for not only in person, but the digital age, because we are also servicing, as I use that word again, another generation that knows more about the digital age than we know. And that, then you know, that my generation knows, that the children that are being born now know of a digital age even as well as they know of an in-person age. And so I'm always cognizant of the fact that the change is constant. It doesn't mean that we have to lose things. It means that we gain things along the way. But thinking about gaining things along the way, and we're down to the last 10 minutes now, and someone came on, but I don't know if you're having difficulty coming on and asking a question, come back on again. I saw you. You had the question up, and then you went away. So there might be some difficulties with our connections. As you talk about the digital age, I have people who listen to me that are in China. And I always say that I'm going to say hello to the people who are in these foreign lands that listen. And so hello, China, and hello, Texas, and hello, California. But getting back to you, what kind of art forms have you been exposed to in this time career that you have, other than music, that is allowing you to grow and offer other alternatives within the job that you have? I know you program music, but you're involved in visual arts and everything like that.
Oh,
just
sure,
a little
yeah.
bit
yep.
on that. Just a little bit on that.
I want to take it to a good place. I'll say a couple freeform thoughts here, one of which is the intersection of music and visual arts is fascinating, and whether that's through a musician playing in front of a movie, or whether it, which has been some really creative moments of getting artists to write their own score for movies, to, you know, a light show set to music, to even just, you know, how we experience music and sound and light, or sound and video together. That has inspired me over the years, and I've been very excited to see a number of creative projects that people have come to us with that ask us to think differently about how we experience sound and how we experience light, or how we experience nature around us. And then the other thing I'll offer is on a different front, you know, the literary arts and how and even the art of food, you know, and the culinary arts, and how that has influenced us in both presentation on the stage. I mentioned, you know, we've done some skills tacks. Now we've not just have, you know, like a chef Robert Irvine come in for a show, but we've taken a taco event, a sangria event, and different ways that either pop culture is intersecting with the culinary arts at different moments in time, and created an experience for guests, for our community, that is something that, you know, didn't exist 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah. Well, now I have to stop you because we do have a question for you, and I want to give you some more time, and we're under 10 minutes. So I want to give our guests an opportunity to ask the question, and ample time for you to answer. Hello and welcome to Lenny Godfrey Straight No Chaser. Give me your name and where you're from.
Hi, my name is Michelle, and I'm from Houston, Texas. Thank you so much, Patrick. This has really been enlightening. But I'd like to ask, why do you think the U.S. doesn't support the arts like other countries, for example, the U.K.?
That's an excellent question, and I'll just say that I worked with the Houston Blues Society maybe 3 or 4 years ago now, and brought a half dozen blues artists up from the Houston area for our blues festival the year after the hurricane came through, again, just a few years back. I met some wonderful people that I'm still friends with, that Una Greenleaf still calls me to this day, and we're now good friends from the Houston blues scene. But, you know, to the question of the U.S., what a frustrating experience it is. I feel that some of what the U.S. is built upon in that capitalism and free market society, combined with our multi-party governments, politics, and though it feels particularly stressed in the last decade or so, you know, I think it's probably there's some elements of that tension between a multi-party system has always been there, and so they're playing politics with dollars and don't show the same commitment to it from a government level that our colleagues across the pond do throughout Europe and other areas. And certainly we can all tie the success of different eras of civilization to a thriving art scene, and so feel frustrated that our own country doesn't take it as seriously. I think I suspect that some of it's too because the corporate sector here in America does support it in some areas and in some instances stronger than some of our colleagues in other countries across the world do, but largely it's a source of frustration here in America, and I don't have a good answer for it beyond you know, I share the frustration and I think it's the American way of capitalism and kind of making it on your own is how our government has looked at it for you know, two centuries now.
Right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Michelle. Thank you again for calling in. Thank you so much. You know, I find that there is a concern that I have because we in this country don't regard the arts with the respect, I think, that some other countries, they provide for their artists. They make sure that artists, as they retire, are taken care of. We do that to a certain extent, but we, the artists, are doing that. It's not something that I believe is supplemented by the government. So it is a concern that I think that we need to pay attention to. Now, I'm going to tell you, I told you that the time was going to fly by, and we're down now to almost the last 3 minutes of it. I need to talk to you for another minute, and then I need to do some housekeeping and then sign off. But I do want to tell people that we are going to do the video of this, the after show afterthoughts, will be on YouTube and the Godly Entertainment page on Facebook. Patrick and I are going to and take a 5-minute break, and then we're going to go and we are going to Zoom and resume some of this conversation. So those of you who are interested in hearing a little bit more of this and seeing Patrick, you've already seen me enough. But seeing Patrick and listening to him tell us a little bit more about what he does, do catch up with me after 9 p.m. this evening, because that gives us enough time to do that and for me to upload it. Now, in this last minute or so, Patrick, do you have anything that you'd like to share with us and for us to know about the job that you do or the place where you work or the people that you work with and how that has influenced you through the arts?
Well, I thank you for the opportunity to speak to your audience tonight and always appreciate our time together. I am blessed to work with a phenomenal staff that actually does everything that I was talking about tonight. And the creative people that I work with and alongside, as well as our community's volunteer spirit and sense of place here in Bethlehem, sense of pride that they have to be a part of ArtsQuest has served us very well. And I encourage, you know, everyone to think of new ways of how they can use the arts to empower community conversations, because it's an excellent equalizer, an excellent common ground for us to approach each other in the future.
Well, thank you. I thank you so very much, and I'm going to be talking to you in a little bit, but now I'm going to remind my audience that next week we have a phenomenal guest. If you are familiar with the shows The Wiz, Ain't Misbehavin', Nothing But the Blues, Guys and Dolls, Cats, you're familiar with my good friend, Ken Page, who will be here next Wednesday on the 9th of June at 7 p.m. And so we'll look forward to seeing you on the radio. And with that said, I want to thank my guest, Patrick Brogan, for coming in. And we'll talk a little bit more on the after show, after thoughts after show. And with that, I want to thank you all for tuning in again to Lenny Godfrey Straight, No Chaser. I'll be here next Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And thank you again for tuning in to us. And please call back, call in with your questions, call in with all of the information that you'd like us, and let me know what you'd like to hear us talk about. And with that, I bid you a good evening, and I will see you on the radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever.
when you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight, fever, in the morning, fever all through the night. Listen to me, baby.